I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi everyone, Melissa here. Just a note before we start. This episode contains descriptions of suicide, which could be distressing to some listeners.
There's a give and take in the world of celebrity. This is the give.
Give us away!
This, as controversial and unseemly as it is the take. And now an anonymous hacker has taken it a step further, posting images of nude celebrities on a messaging site.
They lose an element of privacy. It doesn't make it right or wrong, but they, taking that job, they know that they're going to be scrutinized.
I would say to other victims who maybe don't have the confidence and don't know what to do about pursuing it, that I know exactly how you feel. And I would just want to say to people, don't give up hope. Even if it takes years, you can get justice, and you didn't deserve to have this happen to you.
Presumably in some of these cases, those pictures have been provided willingly and then abused in the sense of they are then being shared amongst people they didn't expect.
It is the boys who are under pressure to get these images, to attain them, to share them.
For a bravado amongst
exactly,
their friends.
Exactly, exactly. To tie into this idea of masculinity and to prove their masculinity. And it's the young girls and women who are feeling that pressure, who are feeling that coercion, that harassment. Which is why I would just question that idea of it willingly being provided.
In March 2019, Lee Nicol, then playing for Charlton, received a message from a man on Instagram who claimed he'd seen her in an X-rated video. She did not believe it. It couldn't possibly be true. Until she saw the footage, and in an instant, her life was shredded. Lee was a victim of revenge porn. Her iCloud was hacked, and private content, which was made in 2014, aged 18, was uploaded on adult websites. It went viral, sending the Scottish midfielder down a dark path, littered with thoughts of suicide. Lee would wake up, think about hanging herself from the tree in the garden, be sick, and repeat the cycle. She is sharing her story on Between the Lines because we do not talk about mental health enough in football. We do not consider how people in the game feel enough, all too happy to tear them down, but express sadness and shock when someone tragically takes their own life. Lee's is a jarring story, but one that ultimately ends in triumph. It has taken a long time for her to be okay. It's still an ongoing process, but the tree has taken on a different meaning, and she is now a source of inspiration. Lee, this might be an uncomfortable place to start, but I think it's the most important one because mental health is still not discussed today widely and deeply in this industry. The last thing you see before you leave the dressing room on a match day is a picture of the tree in your garden. It now symbolizes resilience and strength and power and growth. But initially, it didn't symbolize that for you. What did the tree represent in the aftermath of what happened to you, the initial stage?
Yeah, so the tree now means the absolute world to me. But a couple of years ago, it was the place that I had decided that that was a symbol that I had to go and take my own life. So every single morning that I woke up, it was the first thing that I seen, and I had assumed that that meant that that was a sign that I had to go and end my life at that place. And I felt that way for a number of weeks, and I couldn't shake it off, because anytime I went to the toilet or my bedroom, I didn't have any curtains up, so probably my own fault. But it was the one thing that I seen I couldn't shake off. I always thought that, yep, this is it. That's the sign right there. Go and do it. It'll make everything so much easier for you. And it was a constant battle every single day of my life. And I remember having like stern words with myself, like, how can you look at that tree differently? Because there's going to come a point where you're going to go and do it. And I had to self-talk. And I just came up with a meaning in my head that tree had survived all the weathers. It had survived all the storms. It loses branches weekly, monthly, yearly, but the core of it still remains, and it grows again. And the tree doesn't ever fall, but it does lose parts of its identity throughout the journey as well. But the tree is still standing. So it did definitely have a deeper meaning before, but that was my perception that changed. And even that didn't just change overnight. I had to self-talk myself into believing that that tree meant that it was a sign of survival.
That's quite a scary place to get to, where you're waking up on a daily basis and thinking you have to end it all. And, you know, that thought is hanging with you and living with you through everything that you're doing in the day. Obviously, that gets built up as well over time. Before you got to that point, what were the initial sort of mental impact on you?
The first mental impact, it was sheer shock. It was panic attacks, it was shame, it was guilt, it was a feeling of loss. I do not know what to do. I do not want to, I don't know what to think, I don't know what to say, I don't know how I can help, I don't know how I can stop it. I was just utterly confused, and I felt guilty. And then that soon turned into I was completely ashamed. And that was the initial feeling. And then that then turned into me believing all of that and believing what other people thought of me, because what I had seen and what I'd heard, and I became what everyone thought, well, I thought people were thinking of me. And that was the emotions that then got me to that place. There wasn't a day where I wasn't sick all throughout the day. I used to have to sleep with a champagne bucket that usually we would have after the game, and we'd put a champagne or ice in it. And that was then what I had beside my bed. Between my bed and my wall, it was kind of at the same height of me, so that I could just tilt my head and I didn't need to move, because I was that weak that I couldn't move as the weeks went on, and I was really, really ill with it. So that is where I was at mentally with it. And then that then came to the conclusion in my head that I had to go and take my own life. But I think I felt every single sense of emotion. It felt a little bit like grief, as if I had lost someone, but I hadn't lost someone. The only person I think I'd lost was myself, because I had been tarnished with a completely different identity to what I'd been brought up as and what I knew myself as because of this situation that happened.
Well, the way you're describing it, and you saying you lost yourself, it does sound like that, because it seems like on a day-to-day basis you weren't actually doing much, you weren't living, you weren't engaging in things, you just weren't being you at all. It sounds like you were waking up, being sick, having these thoughts, and going to bed and continuing the cycle.
Honestly, that was as exciting as my day got. I wouldn't shower, I wouldn't brush my teeth, I wouldn't eat. My friends, I had two best friends living with me at that time, and they had to sleep with me each night. They had a little rota that went on, but as soon as their alarm went off at 6 a.m. in the morning, obviously when I was sleeping, I wasn't really sleeping. So like as soon as I heard the alarm, that was me up, and I would then start crying. I'd be shaking, I'd be trembling, I'd be sick immediately, and they even felt guilty about leaving me. And then I would literally just lay in bed, take myself downstairs. I don't know why I would take myself downstairs, but that would be my life. And I achieved absolutely nothing during that period of my life. Like, I do not know how I managed to keep myself breathing. I was just a waste of space.
How do you sort of shake that off? I know it takes so much because you're now debilitated on every sort of level. You're not actually wanting to do stuff. You're actually not wanting to exist, which is why the thought of ending it all comes. But how does that process of getting out of it start? I know you say you had friends around you and stuff, so obviously that support system mm-hmm. is crucial.
Honestly, as cliche as it sounds, and I hate saying it, but the matter of fact is it was time, and it was just letting the storm pass and not having an expectation on it's going to get better tomorrow. It was literally just getting by hour, and that was success to me. And that was, I hate saying it, but it was time. Like, looking at it now, it was like time helped and people around me got me through it. But there was also, you had to find that strength from within you. And I kept saying to myself, Lee, if you get through this, you're going to be an inspiration to many, many people. I don't want to be just another stat that has done the inevitable and took her own life, when a lot of people did expect that from me. I had a lot of friends that, even though I hadn't said that I wanted to die, they knew quite clearly that's where I was. And I knew that by the amount of cards, flowers, people at my door every single hour. You could just tell that they were petrified. So people and time was what got me through. But I think finding that strength in your body to want to survive. And I found a purpose, the fact that I said to myself, this time next year, on the exact date that it happened, I want to be around a table with my best friends cheering. And I want to be able to say this happened for a reason. And although it was the worst thing that I'll ever go through in my life, there's good that's came from it. And I had that motivation to survive it, to inspire other people that haven't been able to survive it. And I think that's what got me through. I've always been someone that likes to help and inspire other people. And I guess that's a quality in life that was the difference, because I wasn't motivated for myself. I wasn't motivated because I physically wanted to be here. I was motivated by, in a year's time, being able to be that inspiration that someone looks at when they're going through the same thing as me and says, Lee got over it and Lee's happy again. And Lee still got a future and a career, and she's now helping other people. And I think that was genuinely the strength that I had from really early on in it. Even though I didn't see a way, I didn't know how. I didn't know how it was going to be able to happen and how I would get to 12 months on. But I knew that I was going to do it for other people. But it wasn't myself, it was other people. Because to me, it would have been easier just to take myself away from the situation completely, rather than put up with it.
When you speak about other people there, it's interesting, because not just from the inspiration element, but often when something happens to me, when I'm compromised in my safety or something, you know, very sexually driven or racially driven is targeted to me, I don't think about myself. I always think about my family, like, oh, what if my mom sees this? What if my dad? What if my brother? And so for you, when you've been a victim of this crime, did you think about, oh my goodness, my parents are going to see this? Did all those things cross your mind?
I think for me, when I knew I had to make the phone call to my family before it became as big as what it did, I knew it was getting there. And having to phone, it was my brother that I called. My brother's a little bit older than me, but he's always been my inspiration in life. He's always been that father figure to me. So he was the one that I had to make the phone call to. And the hardest thing for me was my brother was nothing but just proud of me my whole life and what I'd achieved. And I was his little sister that never brought him any problems in life. He didn't have to worry about his little sister when she was at high school and having loads of boyfriends, or because I was so into my football, boys weren't a focus. So my brother still to this day hasn't met like a boy that I've ever dated or a relationship. So it's me even saying on TV to my brother that someone is good looking was really difficult for him to at least stop it. So for me to then pick up the phone and probably say the words that he would never have had an idea would ever come out of my mouth was, it was unimaginable, and it was probably the toughest part of it. I can remember I said to myself, I'm going to phone my brother. If he doesn't answer, that means I don't need to tell him. And again, that was another sign that I just thought that if he doesn't answer, that means he'll never find out. And he didn't answer, but he actually phoned me back seconds later, and I was watching it ring, and I was like, I can't answer. And I answered and asked him if he was at work. And he said, yeah, yeah, I'm just leaving. I said, call me when you're in the car. And when he was like, no, tell me. And I said, no, call me when you're in the car. And he was like, tell me. So he had left, and I told him. And you know what? His initial reaction was better than I could have ever have wished for. He tried to make a slight joke of it to kind of humour the situation a little bit. And I was like, no, I'm being serious. Like, he said, what do you mean, Lee? He said, you're a no. He's like, Lee, no disrespect, you're a nobody. Why would anyone be interested? And I was like, you don't understand. You don't get it. It's going viral. And he went, what do you mean viral? What, in your world? Like, and I was like, I don't want to have to go into any more depth than this, but please just trust me. I'm not being a hypochondriac. I'm not being a drama queen. This is going big. He said, right, okay, right, well, we'll deal with it. I'll give you a call back. And he called me back a couple of minutes later, and I think he processed it. And he was my shining star. If he took it another way and my brother had turned his back on me or made it difficult for me, I think that would have been enough to, if my family had disowned me or made it difficult for me, I think that would have been enough for me just to take myself away from everything. Because I think one thing, and I think you'll probably be the exact same and many people listening, you never want to let down your family. It's the one people in the world that you never want to disappoint, let down. So yeah, I was just really fortunate that I had a brother that stood by my side, and still even at this point, we are now the best of friends, and my relationship with him now is solid.
It's so weird how we build things up in our head to the worst case scenario first, you know, thinking like that often impacts a situation so badly because we think about it so negatively that infuses everything that we do, and then we're acting on that. So that's very positive that he was there for you and that your family was there for you. Are you also at that point thinking about your career? Like, what does this mean now for your career? Football, like you've said, was everything to you. That was your focus. That's what you threw yourself to.
The moment it happened, the moment I accepted that I had lost everything, from my career to my family, to my friends, I thought they'd disowned me. I thought I'd lost everything. My head went to a place that I just would never imagine. It was like, I've not got football. I've not got my work. I worked in education at the time. I'm not going to have any friends. My family's going to disown me. I'm going to be a very lonely human being. And I was so set on that. I was convinced and accepted that. And when I got a phone call from a football club, I said, my first words were, you don't have to have this conversation with me. I'm stepping away. It's totally okay. And I can remember Steve, my general manager, said, Lee, what are you talking about? We're going to stand by you. And I started crying. I said, what do you mean? Why would you stand by me? Like, after this, he was like, you are a victim, Lee. So we are going to stand by you. You're a victim. You have not put this out there yourself. And you know what? If you had, we'd deal with that as well. But you're a victim. So why would we turn our back on you at Charlton Football Club? You have got the full support of everyone here, and we will do what it takes. Now have the time off that you need. And we will. And he literally phoned me numerous times a day for weeks. And having that support again, all with my brother supporting me and with my football club supporting me, it removed issues that I didn't need to worry about.
Yeah.
And that's what it did. So it was like, right, okay, I don't need to worry about that because they're okay. I don't need to worry about that because they're okay. Even though I still felt sheer guilt and total emotions towards it, it wasn't adding any more pressure to the situation that I was going through. And I'm sure you understand like what that means, and anyone listening, that it was just eradicating potential other problems being thrown in the mix, that it might have been one too many if one of those didn't support me.
Now, even with your family support, with having your friends all around you, with having your football club standing by you, those are all very, you know, significant, important things to have. It was still difficult to overcome how much it had impeded you.
Yeah, it was impossible to me. So it was. I still had to look at my friends, so I didn't know what they were thinking, but I was also looking at my friends that they were broken over it as well. They were sick over it. They were angry over it, not because of me. They were angry at the world. And they were in as bad a place as me at times, because I was never a friend that suffered. I was always the friend that had the answers for everything, and I was the positive one. And to see someone like that, I guess it's like seeing your mum upset. None of us really are ever used to seeing her like that. So when you see someone that you're never used to seeing upset and being so helpless, my friends really struggled with that. I think they were scared that it was the last time that they would ever see me. But yeah, it was still so difficult. Even looking back, I'm like, well, I still have my family and I have my friends. So why was it hardly? And it's really hard to explain why it was hard, even all the support I had around me. But just the guilt, I couldn't leave the house. I was so scared because how big it got. And I thought, why is everyone interested in this? Like, that's my private life. It's nothing to do with anyone else.
Well, that's why it was so difficult, because your personal life was invaded in a very explicit sort of way. You know, that's you, it's your body, it's your choice, it's your decision, it's your intimate moments, your moment for just you and that person, not the rest of the world or whoever wants to click on a link. And that is quite a huge thing. It's not, oh, this small little thing happened and it's okay. It's something you have to wear, because I suppose in your head as well, anyone looks at you, whoever they are, even if it's complete strangers, you're thinking, are they looking at me because they've clicked the link?
Yep. That is the feeling that I've had ever since it happened. Every time I walk into a shop, every time I walk into an environment where I don't know everyone in the room, whenever I go to a nightclub, whenever I go on holiday, whenever I go to the airport, I'm always looking over my shoulder thinking, why is he looking at me? Is he looking at me just to be, because he's people watching? Is he looking at me because he knows who I am? And that is a really difficult battle that I'll have to fight for the rest of my life, sadly. And I deal with it now. It's just became a normal part of my day-to-day life, but I genuinely wish it wasn't.
I know, yeah.
So I really wish that I didn't have to look at someone and try and read through their minds. The actual fact, they could just be daydreaming. But I think that's just the place that I'm at. Sadly, many times they are looking at me because they recognise me and they're trying to work out where they've seen me from. And I just don't think that... I've always been someone with so much respect for myself in a sexual aspect, in a relationship aspect. I'm very private. So for that to then come out, I can't look at myself the same still at this point. I just have to deal with it. I look at myself and I think that's no longer private to me. So I don't bother with boys now, or men now. I don't bother, because I'm like, well, it's no longer a private element of my life. So I don't really see why it's special, and that's not special to me anymore. And I think that's something that's been ripped away from me. So I've got no confidence or no interest at the moment, and haven't in 2 years now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you break it down, it's so scary. I don't even know if scary is the right word, but how somebody taking a very nasty action, but it probably, you know, something they decide to do without even really thinking about it, the devastating impacts it can have all this time later on you in a mental essence, in a personal life essence. Like you said, it's a daily battle that you're still fighting. And I suppose the fact that, you know, with social media, people are able to comment just instantly and continuously, that probably doesn't help either, because they always want to remind you of that.
Yeah, I think social media is one of the, you might be having a good day, but I'm quickly reminded that usually when I'm quite a positive person, and I think sometimes that aggravates some sad people, the fact that I look happy, and I think they need to remind me of my situation by them abusing me, them sending pictures of themselves to me, videos of themselves to me. And look, like, now, again, I've just adapted. I shrug it off. I kind of have a little joke in my head, but there's them times that I'm having a bad day and I don't want to see it. And even if I'm having a good day, I really don't want to see it at all, but I'm able to manage it and I've got a way of dealing with it. But when I'm having a bad day, the last thing I want to do is be reminded of the darkest moment of my life. And I feel that they will go to any level and beyond that they need to get someone down. And do you know what? It works. It really does work. And social media companies do nothing to support this. The amount of times that I and my other friends that play female sport report disgraceful comments and it comes back and they say that they can't remove it. And now I probably play a game where I could delete the comments myself, but I like to just report them to see if social media companies find them bad enough to remove themselves. And you've got to laugh the fact that they don't. So, and usually they're quite quick at getting back to me as well, so I can delete them in a matter of time. But I like to just see if they do remove them now, because you know what, it doesn't really bother me anymore. People call me all these names, but I like to see how much social media companies are actually doing to protect us. So when I report them, instead of deleting them myself, it is now more just to see how bad this issue is and how protected we actually are. And we're not at all, sadly. And I see that by I think I had my first one 2 days ago deleted. And it was probably one of the better comments that I've had, which makes me laugh. And that's why my friends go through it. My black friends are going through it more than anyone at the minute. And if that's what I can't get removed, when it's got explicit words in them, then we've got no chance for the rest of the issues going on in the world at the minute.
Yeah, social media, we've done an entire episode on their lack of action. It's always, they always give out these statements for appeasement, and then never do anything really to follow through. But we have to keep challenging them. That's the only way we can force change. I know you did therapy through the PFA. Were they very good? Did you find that quite helpful, quite necessary at the
Massively.
Time?
Massively. I think obviously everyone I know has had that's had therapy. It's been touch and go, but it does genuinely come down to the person that you get. And probably where if you're prepared to talk as well. So I was very fortunate that I had an incredible woman who I really bought into, and I was looking at as a mother figure that I was able to lean on. And I had 16 sessions with her, and I was able just to talk. I was able to cry. I was able to really say what I was thinking instead of trying to protect my friends and my family from hearing the truth. So with Marie, she allowed me that just open platform to say what I was really thinking, and she was able to establish what was true and what I was making up in my head, and she was able to give me some coping mechanisms. And it took time. It didn't work immediately. I felt more emotional after the first few sessions. It was tough, it was raw, but then we made a breakthrough. And then I got comfortable letting out my emotions. And as soon as I let down that barrier, things started becoming a lot clearer for me. And I absolutely love my time in my therapy. And I'm so grateful for the PFA for allowing that to happen. They really went above and beyond, because I wasn't actually part of the PFA because I hadn't played in the top league. So the fact that they were willing to help me, again, just forever grateful, because I had sadly lost my job at that point in time. I couldn't afford to also be going to pay 80 to 100 plus pound per session. But it was another reason that I do believe that I was able to keep breathing and able to keep waking up in the morning. And then from that, I then got a life coach a few months after that, and he took me to the next level, because he was able to kind of give advice, tell me what to do, instead of therapists will just listen and try and help you understand a little bit more. But my life coach, he's brutal with me. Whether someone's passed away or whether I've had a bad game at football, he's the same with me. It's the same. He'll say, right, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? You still need to get up in the morning. You still need to do your goals. You still need to do this. And there's a difference between both, but I couldn't have done the life coaching without getting my therapy. And I think the next step on from my therapy was life coaching to really push me on, especially with me being a spokesperson.
Football has also acted as therapy and as a life coach for you. It's your centering point. So how difficult was it when, the global pandemic hit and then all football stopped? I can imagine without that source of your joy and your major activity in life, it would have been quite difficult.
Well, I had actually chose to step away from football leading up to the pandemic. So that season, I couldn't mentally put myself through it. So I had chosen to step away because I wasn't comfortable being under the pressure of having to perform, having to get 3 points, having to focus solely on football and give more for my teammates, because I couldn't give more for myself, let alone anyone else. So I had stepped away and I didn't even hesitate. I need to step away. I can't do it. I've not got the brain capacity. I'm not interested. And I stepped away for about a year. And just before the pandemic, I'd started training with Crystal Palace, started trying to get fit. And then the pandemic happened. But actually, when the pandemic happened, it was probably, on a personal note, the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because it allowed me time to stand still, reflect, not be around people, and actually deal with emotions that I'd never dealt with. And then concentrating on my fitness, and alongside me working on my fitness came my mental fitness. It got better without having to compete, because I'm very competitive. So me being able to go out running for myself, by myself, I only wanted to compete with myself. And if I wanted to stop running, I could stop running. I didn't feel guilty on letting someone down. So I think the pandemic gave me lockdown number one, I'm talking about, not a year on. Lockdown number one really did change my life for the better. And I'm really grateful, and I'm aware that I'm probably one of a small percentage of people that really benefited from that pandemic. It gave me the time that I needed after a really tough year. It was actually, ironically, it was a year to the date on that the pandemic happened. Last year in March, it was exactly a year, which was funny because it wasn't how I imagined a year on. I imagined it would be me out for dinner with my friends, cheering, actual fact, we were sitting down at 8 o'clock at night listening to the announcement of Boris Johnson. But what I didn't realise then was it changed me. It took me to the next level again, the pandemic, massively, because I had to deal with more emotions that I had avoided because I was so busy working, trying to build things back up again, that I never ever listened to my thoughts and I wouldn't sleep. I'd sleep 2 hours a night. But by the pandemic happening, I had to sleep because it was boring. I had to go and do fitness because, again, I was bored during the day. I had to look after my nutrition because I had no excuse not to. And I had to surround myself by people that I really wanted to be around, because, again, that's the people that made our days a bit brighter during the pandemic, whether it was on Zoom, social distance, what when they were allowed and whatnot. So I'm really grateful for that. However, now, like, I'm really struggling at the minute because I'm going through an injury. And after speaking out about it a few months ago, I've not been able to go to football and get away from it because of my injury. So I've really struggled with that because all the emotions have came back again. It's been raw and I've had to go back to the start. And now that I know where I'm at mentally, just self-talk and say, Lee, you know why you're feeling like this, just give it a few days and this is what you need to do. And now I totally understand my mind and why I feel the way that I do and what I need to do to help myself.
It's interesting how, you know, you talk about that first point of the pandemic, and when it happened, I think we were all flying, you know, baking banana bread, learning new recipes, thinking about learning new languages and all that stuff. But I suspect, you know, like you say, having spoken out this last lockdown coupled with your injury, the fact that you haven't really been able to socialize, that would have also mentally made it tougher to do all your self-talking.
Massively. Anyone listening to this and yourself, yeah, self-talking, it works, but there's times when it doesn't work, and sometimes you need a cuddle. Sometimes you need to just let it out and someone just tell you it's going to be okay, or someone just say it's okay to feel this way or whatever. There's times where it doesn't work and you just need to ride that storm again and just know that it will get better. And that's what I've struggled with, because when I did speak out, I made a stupid decision not to tell my friends, because I know they would worry. So I just thought I would just speak out, see where it goes. And I didn't tell them, and also didn't have my friends here to be able to lean on when it got tougher than probably what I thought it would be. And that's what I did struggle with. But I do live with my best friend, but she works in a job where she still had to go in for 12 hours a day every day, so she wasn't even here. So it was I was very alone through that period, and I probably didn't think about it as much as I should have in terms of the circumstances and making sure that I was surrounded by people, because I thought, like, I'm in a great place at the minute, I'm fine, like, I get abuse anyway, so what difference is it going to make? But I probably didn't expect the amount of abuse that I got for speaking out. I really didn't expect that, and I didn't expect it to get me in the place that it got me again.
Yeah, that makes sense. I suppose initially there would have been that you wanting to tell your story to help others, to protect others, to make others aware of the dangers, but also the sizable impact it can have on an individual and on their family and on their friends. And all of those things are really good things, but we never really know how something's going to affect us until it happens, until it's out there. And I can relate to what you're saying, because even when I got to the point of thinking, I want to speak about how I've been compromised in this job, doing that and even writing it and whatever is very different to the moment it's out there and people can respond to it. It's quite overwhelming. And again, like you're saying, doing it when you're in a lockdown and you're unable to have people around you and support, not virtually, not through FaceTime or whatever. Sometimes you need a hug, or you just need that literal face to face.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess, like, that's the thing, like, doing it over the phone, again, it takes out so much energy, because it's not just one friend that you need to phone and speak to. It's maybe a couple, and it takes them. I guess I didn't have much breath, because when I went back into a state of anxiety, And I guess if you've experienced anxiety, you'll kind of understand that you kind of struggle with your breathing. So like when I was trying to check in with my friends and kind of keep them up to date, I was really struggling like to use my voice because I kept having to take like a big deep breath, and I was like, I just can't breathe properly. So I think what I probably need at that point was just to someone to sit next to me and put a film on and just be there if I needed to speak. Because the anxiety is really tough. It's really tough to hold a conversation when you're experiencing those episodes, because you do feel like you're on the verge of having a major panic attack, but you also don't know if it's actually a heart attack. And it's a really difficult, it's a horrible feeling knowing that it's coming. My heart feels tight, my chest feels tight. I can feel my heart beating, like it feels like it's coming out my chest. I now can't breathe. And that would last about 2 or 3 days at a time for me. And actually I had to go and end up, I took some anxiety tablets that I haven't done in 2 years just to kind of relax a little bit, because I didn't have an exit route. Like I was in a house and I was like, I can't, what do I do? Who can I speak to? I just want a cuddle. But then I also didn't want to panic anyone, because I'm like, oh God, they all knew this would have been a bad idea. So the last thing I want to do is say they're right, because that's just me.
But with all this, with how taxing it's been on you, and not just when it initially happened, but taxing even now, 2 years down the line, even when you've done all this work and you are so much stronger, you have been that tree, and that tree is now fertilizing others, because I know the Premier League want to get you involved, the clubs to come and give talks to their players to make them aware of these issues. I know Police Scotland and the Ministry of Justice have also been in touch with you to share and inspire people. And that vision you had in your head of sitting with your friends and toasting, that obviously didn't happen because of the global pandemic, but you'd initially talked yourself out of ending it all because you wanted to inspire, you wanted your story to help others, to make a difference, and now that's happening.
100%. I think after the first week of me speaking out, things calmed down and I really started to see the positive effects that it had. Because I guess as human beings, we're equipped to just look at the negatives in life. Don't know why, but it seems to be that for every 100 comments I was getting that were positive, there was that one that would just wind me up and I get angry. And I'm like, have you not read the article? Have you not read it? Why do you feel the need to comment that? So once the raw emotions and the kind of panic of it all settled, I was able to kind of have a smile on my face. And then from that, opportunities that it was as if they heard what, it was as if I had said in the article exactly what I wanted to come from it. And I actually hadn't said that. And the two things was working alongside the FA to educate football clubs. And the second thing was working alongside schools. And that was my vision that I had. And about a week later, Matt and Fraser at B5, a consultancy, had contacted me asking to meet. And it was a dream for me. I just thought, have you been listening to my conversations? So for them to then contact me at the time that they had to offer me an opportunity to come in and work alongside them and Premier League clubs and other football clubs, and hopefully reach out into the women's football sector in a lot larger scale to give them the kind of educating that we feel like is required now. That is my dream. It was just a bit crazy that how it happened. And then I think a couple of days after that, Police Scotland cybercrime team reached out to me, and I couldn't believe that, because I couldn't get the police's support 2 years ago, and then they wanted my help. So again, and that is now going to be rolling out to primary and secondary schools in Scotland, hopefully, all going well. And again, the Ministry of Justice sliding into my DMs. I mean, it's probably one of the better random requests that I've had, I must say. So that was,
yeah, you don't think of the Ministry of Justice when the term sliding into DMs comes into the equation.
It was quite funny, and I think it was B5, he said, well, that's the first that I've seen that. Usually he's having to deal with more negative comments and direct messages into our DMs. But yeah, it was just quite funny. I was like, wow, like it's just something that you just never would imagine. So yeah, so hopefully something will come with that. And then obviously we're working on submitting a new commissioning a new law submission and whatnot. So we've got loads of positive things happening. Again, like, these things are going to take time, and you won't hear much at the minute, but it's like buses, it all comes at once. So everything's going on behind the scenes, and hopefully within a month, 2 months, or 3 months, everyone will be able to see the work that is going on behind the scenes that they wouldn't have heard of me since January. And then hopefully we'll be popping up in a couple of months with what we've been up to and what's in place to help not just victims of revenge porn, but people that are suffering a lot of things, and people who need protected and educated on how to carry themselves on social media. You're not alone. Surround yourself by good people. And if you are suffering, you can slide into my DMs. And I can help, or I can help because I've got ears. So please, if you feel that you are alone, like, I am here to support and be ears. Just never go through it alone.
Thank you so much to Lee for sharing her experience in such an open, vulnerable way, and for offering to be a set of ears. Don't be afraid to talk about how you're feeling. There is an endless supply of mental health resources that you can turn to. Regardless of where you are in the world, checkpointorg.com provides links to help in your local area. Take care of yourself and check in on your friends, family, colleagues. Talking and listening are powerful tools that can help save lives. Between the Lines is a Stakhanov production, written and narrated by me, Melissa Reddy. Our producer is Charlie Morgan. Our assistant producer is Natalie Wilson. The executive producers are John Teague and Luke Aaron Moore. Sound design and mixing is by Tom Wally. All music comes courtesy of Epidemic Sound. Thanks for listening. Tune in next time.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.